This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Scott Simon. Every day we get a lot of questions about the virus, its properties, the way it spreads, how we can better protect ourselves. Here to try and answer some of your questions, NPR's Global Health and Development Correspondent, Jason Bobby. And Jason, thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
And before we get into some of those questions, President Trump made a surprising announcement tonight.
Today I'm instructing my administration to halt funding of the World Health Organization while a review is conducted to assess the World Health Organization's role in severely mismanaging and covering up the spread of the coronavirus.
Now, of course, Jason, the Trump administration's response to the virus has been widely criticized for mismanagement. What reasoning was provided behind this cut?
Well, President Trump, you know, he just had very strong words of criticism that he's now throwing at the World Health Organization. He accused them of covering up the outbreak in China, of parroting misinformation from Beijing, of, as you had in that clip, him saying they were severely mismanaging the crisis and failing to inform member states of the extent of the problem. He basically put a lot of the blame for this global crisis on the WHO. He said that if the WHO had done its job effectively, the outbreak could have been contained at its source in China. You know, I think most epidemiologists would disagree with him on that. Viruses don't respect borders. The WHO has been warning about the danger this virus poses globally for months. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont said tonight that what Trump was doing in the midst of the worst pandemic in a century makes about as much sense as cutting off ammunition to an ally as the enemy closes in. But the president says the funds are suspended and his administration is going to review the relationship the U.S. has with the WHO.
Let me ask you about contact tracing, because that's one of the things that many people say has to happen for the all countries to go back to some degree of normal everyday life. Yeah. What's the use of contact tracing?
So contact tracing is about trying to hone in on where exactly the virus is. And this doesn't work. It wouldn't work in New York right at the moment when you've got this huge explosion of cases going on. But in the early days, when you get only some clusters of cases, and in the later days, when you start getting down to having very few cases, being able to find out exactly where the virus is, who's infected, who may have been infected, and basically put this buffer around those cases and around the virus itself. So this idea is that if you can find out who possibly was infected, because you know who actually is, trace those people, track them down, monitor them. If they don't get infected, then you know you have broken the chain of transmission. So it's this way of trying to just hone straight into where the virus is and cut off any additional transmission to other people.
So let me understand. Somebody who was diagnosed says, well, I talked to this person, I met this person, I shook hands with this person, I had dinner with that person, and they trace them, right?
Right. And so they would assess, well, did you just talk to them across the counter? Was it 6 feet away? Or was it someone you actually sat down and had dinner with? So they would analyze whether or not this seems like there was the possibility for transmission. If there was, they would go to that other person, talk to them, see if they have symptoms. If they do, get them tested. If not, monitor them. Monitor them probably every day. And the places that do this really well, they're checking in either electronically or in person every day with those people. And warning them, usually those people will be told to self-quarantine for 14 days if they can, because they are now at risk of actually developing the disease. And so it's this way of really making sure that once you know one person is infected, the other people who may have been infected by that person, trace them down, get in contact with them, monitor them closely, and keep it from spreading any further.
This question from Hope in Los Angeles.
I want to know if there are any civil rights concerns or privacy concerns that would arise with the widespread use of contact tracking after individuals were to test positive for COVID-19. And if voluntary waivers or something along those lines could alleviate any legal barriers.
That's a big question. What's happened in other countries?
It's a very interesting question. And so let me just talk about Singapore. Singapore was highly praised. It was a place that very aggressively did contact tracing. And they actually used the police force to track people down. The police are quite good at this. This is what they do, right? They find somebody. They're like, who did you have contact with? And they go and they find the other people. They also were publishing not the names of who was actually testing positive, but if it was at a particular church, they would disclose that it was at this church, that this business had a cluster of cases. Other countries have been much more open about who it is that has tested positive, about not worrying so much about, yes, some of the civil rights issues that we would be concerned with oftentimes in this country. And Singapore has basically taken this approach that getting ahead of this outbreak, getting ahead of this disease is more important than somebody's privacy or some civil rights. And that has been the approach. And yes, in this day and age, when you can actually track somebody's movement by their cell phone, and governments potentially could do that, there are a lot of reasons to be very concerned about what might happen. And some places are choosing to actually use those technologies to do that. So it's definitely something that needs to be weighed. What is the amount of privacy we're willing to give up, and how important is it to get this epidemic under control?
Jason, we have a question from one of our younger listeners, 10-year-old Liam in Maryland.
I'm Liam Slattery. Is there going to be a national mandate for masks and PPE?
By the way, Liam, thanks for listening. Hope you heard yourself tonight. Jason?
That's a great question, Liam. I doubt that you're going to see a national mandate on this. Masks have actually traditionally been banned in a lot of states. And so masks have been a state issue prior to this outbreak.
We should explain banned because people rob banks wearing masks. And that's
right. Yeah. And so there are some places where you're just not allowed to wear a mask in public. And now you actually have some states requiring people to be wearing masks in public. Actually, tomorrow, Maryland is going to mandate that people who are going into shops have to be wearing masks. LA has a mandate like that. So does Miami Beach. The CDC last week issued national guidelines recommending wearing face coverings in public for all Americans. But like I said, this has really been a local issue and a state's issue, and it's probably likely to remain that way.
So municipalities will choose on their own rather than there be any kind of national policy.
Yes. There's a national policy from the CDC recommending this, but I think we're only going to get it mandated probably from local levels. And I think that's what you can expect to see, just like some of the stay-at-home orders. That's really being run by the states. It's unlikely that the national government is going to step in on this.
NPR's Global Health and Development Correspondent Jason Beaubien, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're listening to The National Conversation with All Things Considered.